Right, good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, September 10th, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It's almost Friday. It is 66 degrees and cloudy here in upstate New York. It's kind of chilly, actually, but hey, it's already September. So, where did we leave off yesterday? We've been talking about clones and clones in the food supply. Definitely disturbing to discover. And I do remember when it happened, but I guess I didn't realize all of the intricacies that were going on. But yes, the FDA approved cloned meat from cows, goats, and swine in the food supply, but it was a gentleman's agreement between farmers and the FDA that they weren't going to release it into the food supply. But then we find out that places like J.R. Simplot, Mr. Simplot Potato, and was the Simplot the potato and the apple? It might have been the two new GMOs on the market. Hold on, S-I-M-P-L-O-T, potato, yes, and apple, maybe, Simplot Foods, I don't know, the Arctic apple and the innate potato, FDA.gov. So let's see, today the Food and Drug Administration, March 20th of 2015, completed its evaluation for two varieties of apples genetically engineered by Okinawan Specialty Fruits and six varieties of potato genetically engineered from J.R. Simplot Company. So it was not their apple, but it was their potato, and concluded that these foods are as safe and nutritious as their conventional counterparts. And of course, that's what we keep finding time and time again. A potato is a potato, an apple is an apple. Apparently a cow is a cow, and a pig is a pig as well. It says Simplot's varieties of Ranger Russet, Russet Burbank, and Atlantic potatoes are collectively known by their trade name Innate and are genetically engineered to reduce the formation of black spot bruises by lowering the level of certain enzymes in potatoes. In addition, they are engineered to produce less acrylamide by lowering the levels of the amino acid called aspergine and by lowering the level of reducing sugars. And I think that acrylamide, I was looking at that yesterday, acrylamide. It's why you should never eat potatoes that have turned green or the eyes. You got to dig the eyes out because that is a poison, that acrylamide. And I mean, though a little bit's not going to hurt you, if you consumed large amounts of green potatoes, let's say, you could probably get very sick. It says acrylamide is a chemical that can form in some foods during high temperature cooking, such as frying. Huh, so maybe I'm wrong. I swear to God, that's what I was reading yesterday. And has been found to be carcinogenic in rodents. So they're telling us that acrylamide, well, I don't really want to get into potatoes today, so we'll save that one. But I am pretty sure that that's the stuff that's in the eyes and that makes it turn green. So anyway, let's finish this up because I want to get into bigger and better things and put all this food stuff aside. We're going to get down to our genetic material next. Anyway, foods derived from genetically engineered plants must meet the same legal standards, including safety standards, as food derived from traditional plant breeding methods. And to help developers of food derived from genetically engineered plants comply with their obligations under the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act and FDA regulations, the FDA encourages them to participate in a voluntary consultation process with the agency prior to commercial distribution. What on earth? Because we talked about this before. Because they had done blanket statements for genetically engineered foods, as well as we saw over the last 2 days, cloned animals, except for sheep, mind you, but cows, goats, and pigs are all allowed, that a genetically modified version is exactly the same. A cloned version is exactly the same. And because of that fact, it doesn't have to go through any mega rigorous testing because, hey, they had studies done, remember? And then we found out that two of the three people that were involved in the studies the FDA had for cloning happened to be invested in the cloning technology. So, you know, who would have thunk that there'd be more fraudulent, potentially fraudulent studies? But anyway, so what this document says here, too, in regards to the potato and the apple and GMO in general, is that, yes, there isn't any approval process that needs to happen. They are just encouraged to participate in a voluntary consultation process with the FDA prior to commercial distribution of new genetically engineered plants. So how wonderful is that? So let's see. The show yesterday was titled WTO, as in World Trade Organization, and we looked at that where we were being sued over loss of revenue by Canada and Mexico for putting country of origin labels per a United States law on meat. And because they felt that they were getting the short end of the stick, they had come after us through the World Trade Organization, and we lost our argument that our labeling laws required it. They said it was illegal internationally, and they forced us pretty much to vote and remove country of origin labeling from pork, chicken, and beef. Also, so it was titled the World Trade Organization, the FDA, which we know they failed us many times, the USDA, who doesn't even know if we have cloned meat in the food chain, no labels in cloned food. And from there, we're going to take this to the next step, to DNA and DNA databasing. And back a few weeks ago, we had looked at the biotechnology blueprint, the new one that was rolled out here in the United States. And we found out from Ron of Game On that there was also a biotech blueprint that was rolled out in Canada as well as in some other countries. And one of the things that I had talked about was just coming from a technology perspective and working with databases and large infrastructures for a long time, I helped develop the type of stuff that they're working on right now from an infrastructure perspective. And once they start databasing things, and we know this, they slice and dice us so many ways now using search engines and search history and IP addresses. And, you know, with the electronic medical health records push and Obamacare, this is going to allow them to get around the HIPAA privacy record and put all your stuff online and eventually at some point maybe even sell access to that data to biotech companies who want to be able, and we talked about this, get rid of their line item budget for R&D because, you know, they'd have to acquire databases before large research stores of data that they had paid for and put together on their own in order to then test their meds or whatever they're developing at this point in time. But now, once the genetic information and the genome project that is not only happening on people, but on plants as well as insects, once all that data gets put into some sort of public database, and you're going to say, well, you know, I didn't make my genomic data public. Well, no, you didn't. But there are lots of people who have. There are lots of people who have done DNA testing through commercial means, let's say. And by doing that testing through commercial means, they gave the company access to their full genome. So anyway, let's take a look at a company that has done just exactly that, and that is 23andMe. We heard about them quite a while back, 2013, 2014, I think, is when they were first in the news. We found out that 23andMe was venture funded by Google, and then we find out later that Google's wife, and what is her name? I had it up here somewhere. Ann Wojcicki. She is the CEO, and she is the wife of Sergey Brin, one of the co-founders of Google. 23andMe came out as a low-cost $99 genetic testing company where they would test you for, and that what they started out with was traits. So I saw one example that they had used was that there's a speed trait, like for runners or track, that if you spit into a vial and send us $99 of your money, we have all these traits to tell you whether or not you have them. And people were all over it and they were excited. And then the company started to roll out, well, you could find out if you have the breast cancer gene, or you could find out if you have the tallness gene. I don't know. There were all kinds of things. The FDA got a little annoyed and they said, whoa, you can't go diagnosing disease. So back the truck up, Chuck. And I guess there was definitely some fighting that ensued. 23andMe pretty much didn't listen to anything the FDA said, kind of broke off their association, and then rolled out their service in the UK as well. And I see now what 23andMe is doing is they've launched a couple different ways to utilize this data that they are acquiring. One is for an Ancestry website. Now, how interesting is that? Ancestry.com type stuff where they can now cross-reference genomics in their database and find people that you may be distantly related to and help build you a family tree. Wow! What a dumb end user-friendly way to get people unknowingly and willingly to give up their data and make it public. So, how crazy is that? The other one that I saw was, hold on. There was another headline here. Sorry, guys. I had so many problems already this morning. I had to reboot. I lost all my links, but whatever. You know what? It's Thursday, and I'm not going to stress it. There was another one, though. I don't see it here. So maybe we'll find. Oh, the Cure Together. That's it. Yes. So now, kind of like the same sort of bleeding hearts with the pink ribbon, and people have been donating their money all these years to the cure for cancer that we apparently never could find. But I notice now, and I don't know if we're even ever going to get to that today, maybe tomorrow, there's all these newfangled cancer cures. I mean, it started with the little nanobots that would, you know, go and directly put some drug payload into a tumor, to now these little chips and things. I have all kinds of stories from the last week or so about the cures all over for cancer. But remember, the cure for cancer was always the dangling carrot. Well, 23andMe also has a whole product line called Cure Together, and it's the Cure Together Connections. And you could give up your genomics data for the good of the many to help cure disease and show which diseases are connected. So anyway, I went ahead, and hopefully I don't have anything playing, but let me connect myself here on Skype because I have a little clippy to share. And then we're going to get into some of the horrifying future ramifications that we knew would happen, and now it has become reality. Let me answer. Okay, there we go. So I will never forget the first time that I actually, I don't know if I'm choking or not here. There we go. Okay, I will never forget the first time that I caught this in passing on television, but I couldn't believe what I saw.
This is me.
My DNA.
It helps make me who I am.
Every piece is important.
It's like a self-portrait.
This part makes my eyes blue.
So that's why the sun makes me sneeze.
I might have an increased risk of heart disease,
arthritis,
gallstones,
hemochromatosis.
I'll look into that.
Stuff we might pass on to our kids.
Things I might want to avoid.
Hundreds.
Getting my 23andMe results,
it really opened my eyes.
The more you know about your DNA,
the more you know about yourself.
I do things a little differently now.
Eat better. Ask more questions.
Change what you can. Manage what you can't.
I always wondered what my DNA said about me.
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 Now, I know.
Know more about your health. Go to 23andMe.com and order your DNA kit for only $99 today. Learn hundreds of things about your health at 23andMe.com.
So there you have it. Let me just hang up here. So learn about your health. Spend your $99 because, look, it's so easy and it's just so cheap, and become a part of our database. So anyway, let's read this. 23andMe. is a privately held personal genomics and biotechnology company based in Mountain View, California. The company is named for the 23 pairs of chromosomes that is in a normal human cell. It is saliva-based, direct-to-consumer personal genome tests, and it was named the invention of the year by Time Magazine in 2008. This is what I don't understand, too, is like one of the things that we kept running across in the stories about cloning is that, oh, cloning is so expensive, we just can't afford it, and that's why it's not going to end up being prevalent in the food chain, at least for the time being, because it's so expensive to clone. If they can do $99 DNA testing, I don't think it's going to be, you know, $10 billion to make one beef clone, to be honest. So I'm going to guess that if it hasn't already, cloning has probably come into the sub $10,000 range. I can't imagine it being any more expensive. I mean, we've cracked so many things now, and with supercomputing and this whole bioeconomy and everything else, and universities everywhere with this equipment, I don't think that that we're too far out there. Anyway, 23andMe began offering direct-to-consumer genetic testing in November of 2007. Consumers provide a saliva testing sample that is partially SNP genotyped, and the results are posted online. In 2008, when the company was offering estimates of, quote, predisposition for more than 90 traits and conditions ranging from baldness to blindness, unquote, Time Magazine named the product invention of the year. Interpreted raw genetic data is posted online and may be downloaded by customers. Customers who bought tests with an ancestry-related component have online access to genealogical DNA test results and tools, including a relative matching database. Customers who bought tests with the health-related component, so they must have been add-ons, and received health related results before November 2nd, 2013, and Canadians who bought the product from November 22nd, 2013 have online access to an assessment of inherited traits and genetic disorder risks. And that deadline breakoff date there for the United States was, I believe, the date when the FDA pretty much gave them the kibosh for, quote unquote, diagnosing diseases. Health-related results for non-Canadian customers who purchased the test from November 22nd of 2013 have been suspended while undergoing, and here we go, an FDA regulatory review. As of June 2015, 23andMe has genotyped over 1 million individuals. The FDA marketing restrictions have reduced their customer growth. So in the United States, mind you, the FDA is only standing in the way here, and it's only because they're going, whoa, you know, you're diagnosing disease, not whoa, you are a privately held company that is putting very personal information into an online database that can be hacked or can be sold, sliced, and diced. But because they're going, oh, well, you're diagnosing baldness, let's say. You know, I mean, I don't think they were really, they were giving predispositions to things, saying, you know, just as a basic fact. But like I said, nobody is talking about the 1 million individuals already in the United States and beyond that have their private information in a public database. Anyway, let's continue a little bit more. Product changes. In late 2009, 23andMe split its genotyping service into three products with three different prices. There's an Ancestry Edition, a Health Edition, and a Complete Edition. Oh, what great marketing. This decision was reversed a year later when different products were recombined. In late 2010, the company introduced a, this is what I told you, software as a service, $29.99 a month, a monthly subscription fee. For updates, and I don't know what the cost is, but for updates based on new medical research findings, the subscription model provided proved unpopular with customers, and it was eliminated in mid-2012. But I'm going to tell you what, I will guarantee you that this information to biotech companies is not going to be unpopular. As of December 5th, 2013, 23andMe is only selling raw genetic data, ding, ding, and ancestry-related results in the United States. Again, in the United States. The price of a full direct-to-consumer testing service in the United States has reduced from $999 in 2007 to $99 in 2012. And talk about like Moore's Law and the increase in our electronic power. Look at that. From $1,000 a genetic test in 2007 to $99, $100 in 2012. And it is effectively being sold as a loss leader in order to build, and this is in Wikipedia, mind you, but I read this in a bunch of places, in order to build the valuable customer database. And that is exactly it. Ding, da, da, ding, is the database of genomic data for 1 million people. Do you know, with all of this mad science gone mad that's going on right now and crossing species and testing drugs and switch flipping, do you know how valuable 1 million full genomes would be? The initial price of the product sold in Canada from October of 2014, which included health-related results, for $199 Canadian, compared with the U.S. price of $99 on the same date. Medical research. Aggregated customer data is studied by scientific researchers employed by 23andMe for research on inherited disorders. The large pool of data in its customer database has also attracted the interest of academics and other partners, including, here we go, pharmaceutical and biotech companies. In July of 2012, 23andMe acquired the startup Cure Together, which that must be that other one that they're spinning off there, a crowdsourced treatment ratings website with data on over 600 medical conditions. 23andMe provides services related to some specific medical research initiatives, providing confidential customer data sets to and partnering with researchers to establish genetic associations with specific illnesses and disorders. One analysis comparing 23andMe's Parkinson's disease research with the National Institutes of Health. Here they go. The good old National Institute of Health that's involved in the Brain Project and everything else. Suggested that the company's use of large amounts of computational power and data sets might offer comparable results in much less time. This is, and the fact that it is a Google-funded operation with Sergey Brin's wife in the CEO seat has got to be disturbing to some people. So Google doesn't have access to just everything we've ever done online and who we've communicated with and what we've searched and what we buy. But Google now has access to over 1 million full genetic data sets. And the National Institute of Health hopping into bed with them. 23andMe has launched research initiatives. And remember, they're all involved in the Brain Project, though, because we have National Institute of Health and Google. 23andMe has launched research initiatives enrolling patients into study populations for inflammatory bowel disease, myeloproliferative neoplasms, and lupus. So these are autoimmune diseases. And of course, there are people who want to find a cure. So this would be a great way for them to sign up and give up their data to see if they can be helped. Papers on various genetic traits by 23andMe scientists were presented at the 2014 American Society of Human Genetics. And don't forget to Google just spun off their new parent company, Alphabet, and then split off each of their divisions. And one of those divisions was their immortality division. I believe that was called Calico. And we have the one we love to hate, Mr. Futurism himself, Ray Kurzweil, at the head of engineering. All right, so let's now pop over to a story that I just ran across this morning. 23andMe, and this was from March 12th of 2015, so that was a little bit of the history. Google-backed 23andMe launches a drug R&D effort. Now, who would have thunk it? Yes, and that was March of this year. Google-backed genetic testing company 23andMe is launching its own drug development unit.
Really?
Its own drug development unit. Betting that it can translate its database of customer DNA information into novel medicines. The Silicon Valley-based company announced on Thursday in March. I just lost my place. That it has hired Richard Scheller, a former Genentech executive, to become its chief scientist and lead the company's research and development efforts. Scheller recently retired from a 14-year career with South San Francisco, California-based Genentech, a pioneer of biotech cancer drugs. 23andMe is best known for its saliva-based testing kits, which offers users the chance to peek into their genetic code for cues about their ancestral past. But drug research has always been at the foundations of its business model. Really? I guess that's the first that we really heard that, but I guess so. And, you know, all these people that handed him over $99 also handed over access to their full genome. Much the way social media websites sell advertisers access to their user networks, 23andMe licenses the raw data from its DNA database to researchers. So this is exactly what we were talking about. I knew this was going to happen. Bastards. The company has more than 20 partnerships with drug companies, including Pfizer and Roche, as well as with government and academic researchers. Now, who wants to bet that the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, through the National Institute of Health, maybe even, all have access to that data? But now, 23andMe plans to pursue its own drug R&D efforts. And remember, it was about getting rid of the R&D line item budget. And here we go. Ching! CEO Ann Wojcicki, however you say it, Wojcicki, and that is the wife of Sergey Brin, said that the company's genetic insights could help streamline the time-consuming drug delivery and discovery process. Drug development has only become more expensive over the last 20 years, Wojcicki said in an interview with the Associated Press. I think there is the potential that we could develop a faster, better approach to drug development. It can take more than a decade and over $1 billion to bring a new drug to market, according to some industry estimates, and that figure includes the cost of many drug failures that never make it to the market. Scheller says that the drug industry could improve its track record by targeting research efforts toward patients with specific genetic markers. And this really is the entire precision medicine initiative that we had talked about that Obama touted everywhere, to be able to treat specific genetic diseases for individualized groups of people that, of course, will be able to be discovered through their genomic data. Well, here we go. Ding, ding. We have a company now that can slice and dice it and offer it as software as a service with access to that database. Scheller says the drug industry could improve its track record. Quote, we can bring down the cost if we have fewer failures, Scheller said. This database that 23andMe has accumulated is by far the largest human genetic database in the world. And it's a terrific resource. Oh, yes, I'm sure it is. More than 850,000 people. Well, we just saw as of June, it's 1 million people. This was as of March. Have used 23andMe's test kit, a small plastic tube that customers fill with spit and return to the company for genetic processing. They receive a report analyzing their genetic code for clues about their ancestry and family history. About 680,000 of those customers have given 23andMe permission to use their data for research, so including drug development. So apparently there is an opt-in, so there we go. And at the time, we had 850,000 people, and out of those 850,000 people, 680, so three quarters of those people had given permission, I would guarantee you that it has stayed at least that, if not more. Especially if they offered him, like they said, a subscription to any new updates in the research somewhere along the way. I'm sure that people would, you know, if they all of a sudden said that they came out with a cure for pancreatic cancer, wouldn't you want to know that if you had the genetic disposition for, let's say, pancreatic cancer? This is, first of all, this is a gold mine. But second of all, look at how horrifying this is. They just took, and there's a story here out of Scientific American that I did not put into my queue, but I want to try to find it back in my search results. I don't know. We'll have to see. But there is a whole section talking about and comparing the whole business strategy of Google and how it started as like this innocuous little search engine that it wasn't. It was a loss leader. Google and the search engine on a plain white page was the loss leader. What the future payoff was the mega Google database of everything and anything that anyone's ever needed to know about you, and then their ability to sell access to that database to, you know, advertising companies and to intelligence agencies and whatever they need it for. The database and the data is where the cash cow is. So anyway, back to the story. Wojcicki says that the company's new R&D efforts do not change its research consent policy. We have the business that we have is built on a relationship with the customer, and that remains the core of the company, she said. Outside observers say it could still take a significant amount of time and money to translate 23andMe's genetic information into effective treatments. Quote, it is a tremendous amount of work to take a genetic finding and move it into a drug that will target that pathway, says Dr. Robert Green, a geneticist at Harvard's Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital. Green has received federal funding to study genetic testing practices, including those of 23andMe, though it has no financial relationship with the company. I wonder who funded Green. DARPA, National Institute of Health, I'm sure one of them. While starting up its own pharmaceutical unit would put 23andMe into competition with the drug makers that use its database, Wojcicki said that those companies have been supportive. Rather than launching competing products, Wojcicki expects 23andMe to license many of its drug discoveries to larger, more established drug makers. So what a double benefit for big, large global conglomerates to have 23andMe, the venture capitalist Google started wife of Google Sergey Brin's company, as the big genomics holding house that not only is going to be holding the genetic data and selling them access to that data on a monthly subscription service, but also be doing the drug development and then just licensing that development to the pharmaceutical companies without them having to spend the bottom line. It is unclear how the move will affect 23andMe's complicated relationship with the Food and Drug Administration, which reviews all prescription drugs sold in the United States. 23andMe previously clashed with the agency over its direct-to-consumer DNA test. So I'm sure if they're going to license this rather to a pharmaceutical company, that probably is going to help them circumvent any FDA scrutiny. And then they can let the drug manufacturers use the, what was the act that we read about? The Project BioShield, right? In the event of some sort of emergency or outbreak, the United States government is obligated to buy these untested drugs from the biopharma companies if there's some way that they might cure whatever ails us at the time and has been declared a pandemic. What a tangled web we weave. In November 2013, the FDA ordered the company to stop marketing its personalized health reports, which purported to tell customers if they were genetically predisposed to more than 250 diseases and medical conditions. 23andMe has been working to win FDA clearance for these health tests so that they can be marketed again. And last month, so this must have been February of 2015, the agency cleared the first of them, the test for carriers of a genetic mutation that causes Bloom syndrome, a rare disorder linked to short stature, increased risk of cancer, and a variety of other health problems. Well, there you go. So keep your eye on 23andMe, because, you know, one of the things I realized when I ran across them again this morning is that things have been really quiet out of there after they made the headlines a few different times. And I just was curious as to what they've been doing. And it seems that they've been doing a lot of maneuvering on the backside. What got me looking into them, though, was this story from August 19th, and I somehow missed it, out of MIT's Technology Review. Inside Illumina's plans to lure consumers with an app store for what? For genomes. Yes, a genome app store, people. Gene sequencing company's CEO helps to store the public's DNA data in an online data trove. Here we go. So this is Illumina, I-L-L-U-M-I-N-A. The CEO of the world's leading DNA sequencing company. So I don't know. I guess they said that 23andMe was. Illumina says that he is. Let's say that they're both up there somewhere. Oh, well, he's the DNA sequencing, not the DNA storing. The CEO of the world's leading, well, maybe, the leading DNA sequencing company says he knows how to finally get consumers interested in their genomes by creating an enormous app store for genetic information. Yesterday, so this must have been August 18th of 2015, Illumina said that along with Warburg Pictus and Sutter Hill Ventures, it was investing $100 million into a new company called Helix, plain and simple, to make consumer genomics part of the internet mainstream. Illumina's CEO, Jay Flatley, said in an interview that Helix will subsidize the cost of decoding people's genomes in the hopes of spurring the creation of consumer apps that will draw on the DNA data repeatedly. So they're going to do your DNA for free, I believe, is what he just said, that he is going to eat the cost. He will subsidize the cost of decoding your genome with the promise that it'll draw on the DNA data repeatedly for consumer applications that'll help make our lives better and our health better and our future better. Oh, what a great idea. And I'm sure that he is being as humanitarian as he can. He says, you saw what happened with the Apple App Store. He's rubbing his hands together evilly. It just unleashed the consumer side because apps are so cheap to make, says Flatley, who will be chairman of the new company as well. Flatley says that when Helix goes live next year in 2016, it will sequence and store consumers' DNA and then sell them pay-as-you-go access to it through the applications. So we're going to give you a free DNA test, and then if you want to find out about your health, you can pay $29.95 a month to access that application. Wow. Very, very interesting. So they are just getting rid of that $99 fee. Again, as a loss leader, good marketing skills here. He says, then they'll sell them pay as you go to it through the apps, which will be offered by partners, not even his company, but a third party agency, the first of which are LabCorp and the Mayo Clinic. Uh-oh, Mayo Clinic's getting their hands on research data for free. Profits, so they just had to hire a couple application developers in their bioinformatics department, it seems. Profits will get shared in a model similar to the one for the Apple App Store. If Helix succeeds, it will operate the largest sequencing laboratory of any kind, Flatley predicts. So, okay, he's not the largest yet, but he is deciding that he's going to be larger than 23andMe because he's going to do it all for free. Everyone is trying to unlock the value of the genome, most of all Illumina, which was his former company, and the San Diego-based company whose sleek-looking sequencing machines are also said to be inspired by Apple's designs, is the big winner so far. It dominates the market and last year sold $1.8 billion of DNA sequencing machines, chemicals, and testing. The more sequencing happens, the better for Illumina. Right now, genome sequencing is done by research laboratories at hospitals and even a few national programs. The formation of Helix is about the last big uncracked market, and that is you and me. This is so scary, guys. It's an app store for genomic data. So far, interest by consumers in genomics has been fairly tepid. Good for them. Who do you know whose genome has been sequenced? The problem is that for healthy people, the genome just isn't that important. But what does it mean? Well, when that's where 23andMe's whole ancestry thing actually is a pretty good idea. What is it good for? Well, even though sequencing a genome has become much cheaper, it's just a couple thousand dollars. And to most people, finding out isn't worth the cost. And we found out now it's just $99. Even Flatley, whose genome is sequenced and posted to the internet, has called the experience a bit ho-hum. So how do you get consumers to participate? Well, here's how it might work. Say you download an app from a Helix partner to find out if you have a specific gene variant, for example, the speed gene, and this is what I was talking about earlier, known to be possessed by many athletes. And imagine that app costs $20. Well, you send in a spit sample, and Helix will return just that information to you through the app. So this is going to be like an a la carte model. Instead of $99 to give you a whole barrage of traits, you could pay $20 and just find out if you have like the speed gene. The Helix will sequence much more of your genome. He says that Helix will do an exome plus, that is decode all of your genes and with a few more keystrokes, but not parts of the genome without clear medical relevance. And that will cost perhaps $500. But then if you order a new app that draws on your genes, Helix will already have your DNA information ready to quickly be served up. Flatley says he will be a neutral player storing DNA and serving it up to any app on the platform. So, I mean, you're giving it up for free, basically, in reality. This is really crazy. And like Apple's App Store, which takes a 30% cut of every copy of Angry Birds that's sold, revenue will be shared by Helix and by the app makers, although Flatley did not say what the percentages would be. So they're all going to make cash on you. He did describe one important twist, which whichever affiliate, let's say the Mayo Clinic, first convinces a customer to send in a spit sample will also get paid each time that person's genome is accessed again by any other app. So this is like a spiff to whoever gets you, whatever participating agency gets you to give up your spit to the test. You get paid every single time. Every single time that person's genome is accessed. Wow. That's unbelievable. And this goes on and on and on and on. I don't know. What's the end? What is the end result? Right now, the most important customer-facing use of genetics, and we talked about this, are in cancer predisposition testing, genealogy, and carrier screening. The genealogy test tells you whom you are related, your ethnic origins, and how much Neanderthal DNA you have. Carrier screening is about what's next. When you are ready to have a baby, you can check whether you and your partner share dangerous disease mutations. And I actually had that test done. They made me have it done at the hospital. Companies offering these types of consumer tests, such as 23andMe, and they mention them in Counsyl, C-O-U-N-S-Y-L, have spent millions building out labs, analytical software, or just paying Illumina to analyze the data. So it seems that Illumina's been the back end for some of this. And with Helix, says Flatley, companies won't have to invest in starting a laboratory anymore. Instead, he says any developer with a computer will be able to start a genomics company. Ding, did-a-ding, did-a-ding, ding-ding. Wow, maybe that's how we'll finance UCY. Write a genetics app that we could sell in the App Store. That's crazy. All right, so where do we go on here? I guess here you go. Body clock. Blood test can detect your biological age and predict your Alzheimer's risk. There may actually be some truth to the phrase, age is just a number. Scientists have developed a blood test to determine how old our bodies really are, and that could be a key to predicting a person's risk of developing Alzheimer's and other conditions. And after we read a story that there's been this big outbreak of Alzheimer's in people under 40, it makes you wonder. We've talked about a lot of things that are very similar to Alzheimer's that we're going to try and hit on after the story. A new discovery that came out yesterday that's extremely disturbing says this test developed by a team at King College London measures a person's biological age, which may be younger or older than their actual chronological age. We use birth year to judge everything from insurance premiums or to whether you get a medical procedure or not. Most people accept that all 60-year-olds are not the same, but there has never been a reliable test for underlying biological age. The test looks for a quote-unquote aging signature in your body's cells by comparing the behavior and vitality of 150 genes. Here we go again, guys. Timmons and his team first analyzed the activity levels of a panel of key genes of healthy 65-year-old people by measuring levels of ribonucleic acid, RNA, in their blood. And this information was then used as a marker of biological aging. The researchers then studied the RNA of healthy 70-year-old men and analyzed their health records over two decades, and they found that high gene activity scores were associated with better cognitive health and kidney function across a 12-year period, both of which predict the risk of early death. The men who had a really high score had almost no chance of being dead at the end of the 20 years, says Timmons. And the study published in the journal Genome Biology on Monday shows that the test can distinguish between healthy individuals and patients with Alzheimer's. A significant difference was found in the genetic signatures of those with mild cognitive problems, such as early dementia, and healthy people of the same age. And this means that the test could potentially be used to identify those in the early stages of the disease who have not yet developed symptoms. So, you know, finding out that we have this Alzheimer's epidemic globally, and we have many, many people under the age of 40 that are already showing signs of potential dementia in their future. We find out that doing Benadryl, remember that show? Doing Benadryl every day for a couple years, which there are people with allergic syndromes that have had to do that, and it was actually prescribed by their doctor, have like a 50% greater chance for developing dementia. Well, wait until you hear this. Evidence. This is out of Scientific American as of yesterday. Evidence for person-to-person transmission of Alzheimer's pathology. What? That made me do a full double take. But wait until you hear what this says. Study raises questions about whether proteins implicated in the disease of Alzheimer's are capable of spreading through medical procedures. Now, we found out about another brain disease that we did a bunch of shows on way back in the beginning and before the first cup, but this was something that I was obsessed with for quite a while when I first learned about prion disease, mad cow, bovine, spongiform encephalopathy, CVJD, VCJD, Creutzfeldt variant disease, chronic wasting happening in deer. It's all a very similar disease. There's that pago, I don't know. It's very similar to the disease that they found in the South Pacific Islanders that were eating each other's brains. It was caused by something that they called a prion, which isn't alive. It's actually a protein. And it was a malformation of that prion. But one of the disturbing things that they discovered years after discovering bovine spongiform encephalopathy and VCJD was the fact that, whoops, in medical surgical procedures of the brain in particularly, they didn't think that standard sterilization procedures were actually killing the protein because it wasn't really alive. And they were spreading it between patients. Well, listen to this. Study raises questions about whether protein implicated in the disease of Alzheimer's are capable of spreading through medical procedures. Prions are the misshapen proteins that replicate by inducing normal proteins to misfold and aggregate in the brain, leading to rare diseases such as, here we go, mad cow and kuru. That's the one. That was the South Pacific disease caused by eating brains. In recent years, scientists have discovered that similar processes of protein misfolding are at work in many neurodegenerative disorders, including Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and Lou Gehrig's disease. Now, if I am not mistaken, back probably 6 months ago, a frequent chatter Dell had dropped me an article that had shown some correlation between Alzheimer's and the misfolded proteins and mad cow disease. Now remember, back in the days when mad cow first came out and the whole food chain was apparently quote unquote at risk, and then we had FDA inspectors come out and they changed the rules about downed animals going into the food chain and took out all the spinal matter out of the food that they were refeeding the cows. They said, okay, people, there's nothing to worry about here. Well, good old Georgie Bush was in office. A lot of his friends were cattle ranchers. We didn't want the global United States cattle market to be disrupted. So go back to sleep, people. The food chain is fine. I postulated at that time that it wasn't fine. And then we found a video, oh, maybe a year ago, about one of the slaughterhouses getting caught by swapping out heads of downed animals. This one in particular wasn't for BSE. It was for cancer, but they were swapping out healthy heads of steer for testing when they knew that a downed animal that they were putting into the food chain actually was cancerous. So who's to say that they couldn't have been doing that with cows that had mad cow as well? And we know how much the FDA and the USDA keep us safe. They don't even know if there's cloned meat in the marketplace. Anyway, back to the story before we run out of time. We might continue here tomorrow. So it is a similar process of protein misfolding that are at work in many degenerative disorders, including Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and Lou Gehrig's disease. And now a study in Nature reveals the first evidence for human-to-human transmission of misfolded proteins that underlie the pathology of Alzheimer's disease. These new findings draw upon earlier research conducted on prion disease between 1958 and 1985. A number of individuals with short stature received shots of a human growth hormone extracted from the pituitary gland of cadavers. And interesting that it's the short stature hormone, because isn't that what 23andMe is offering genetic testing on, is that short stature gene? And I saw they were also doing research on Parkinson's. There might be something to that. Anyway, it says this gland, they had taken some pituitary gland liquid out of cadavers that thought to were died of this Krupp-Chelves-Jacob disease, the CJD, and injected it into these other people. And guys, I'm going to run out of time. We have to do the rest of this tomorrow. Make sure you stick around because it is Thursday night. We got Kevin Blanch up next. And then live, Ron, at 7 p.m. Eastern with Game On. At 8 p.m., we have Behind the Woodshed 9, Chuck Tennant, Media. Guys, have a great day.